Australian True Crime, the nation's leading independent true crime podcast, is hitting the road with our live show. We're coming to Sydney, Melbourne and Brisbane this July, and tickets will be available starting May 10th at 9:30 a.m. sharp. They sold out in 2 hours last time, so do not dilly-dally. We know the suburbs of Australia are teeming with some of the most intriguing and chilling true crime stories the world has ever heard. Don't miss the chance to dive deeper and get involved with a live Q&A. With over 1.5 million downloads monthly, these tickets will sell out. So keep an eye on our social media pages and check the podcast bio for direct links to purchase yours as soon as they're released on Friday, May 10. I can't wait to see you there. This is a true crime podcast, as the title suggests. So please consider this your warning that it's not suitable for children, and it probably will contain content that may be triggering to some people. Also, it's an Australian true crime podcast, so Australian Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners should be aware it may contain the voices of deceased people.
The producers of this podcast recognise the traditional owners of the land on which it's recorded. They pay respect to the Aboriginal elders past, present and those emerging.
Good morning. Disgraced detective Roger Rogerson has died days after suffering a brain aneurysm in prison. The once decorated officer turned corrupt cop was serving a life sentence over the murder of a young drug dealer. His career in the force unravelled dramatically with links to organised crime.
In episode 317 of Australian True Crime, we spoke to Ray Mooney, author, playwright and former inmate of Pentridge Prison. One of the subjects we spoke about at length was Ray's friendship with the man known as Mr. Rent-A-Kill, contract killer Christopher Dale Flannery, who disappeared without a trace in May 1985. Flannery was a close associate of infamous corrupt cop Roger Rogerson, who died himself this week at the age of 83. Rogerson was serving a life sentence for the murder of 20-year-old drug dealer Jamie Gow. His conviction for that murder was somewhat ironic, given that he proudly boasted of having killed 3 drug dealers during his police career and gotten away with it. But Rogerson was well and truly retired from the New South Wales Police Force by May 20, 2014, when he and another former detective, Glenn McNamara, ambushed Gow in a storage unit in Padstow in southwest Sydney. Rogerson was in his 70s and McNamara in his late 50s when they covered the floor and walls of the storage garage with tarpaulins and waited for Gow to be dropped off as planned by 2 other men. He was carrying just over 3 kilograms of methamphetamine, and within minutes of walking inside the garage, he was shot dead, wrapped up in the tarp and then zipped up inside a silver surfboard bag. For a bloke with legendary street smarts like Rogerson, the most shocking aspect of this crime is without a doubt its sloppiness. Everything that comes next was captured on cameras, either the standard security cameras mounted inside the storage facility or those inside commercial premises or in and around the suburban unit complex that McNamara called home. At 2:18 p.m. on the day of Gow's murder, Rogerson and McNamara were captured struggling to carry his body in the silver surfboard bag out of the garage before lifting it into the back of Rogerson's white Falcon station wagon, which he'd parked conveniently out front. At 3:03 p.m, the car was captured arriving at McNamara's apartment block in Cronulla. The two men went inside, and at 3:51, they emerged and left the building in the same car. At 4:20, the men can be seen shopping and buying a 2-ton chain block, which according to police they later used to try and weigh down Jamie Gow's body. At 6:24, they returned to McNamara's apartment. Each time they visited his home, they were filmed driving into the underground car park and travelling up and down in the lift. At 7:38, after the men had travelled down in the lift with fishing rods, McNamara's car is filmed leaving the underground car park towing his boat. The silver surfboard bag is clearly visible on the floor of the boat. 6 days later, Jamie Gow's body was found floating 2 kilometres off Cronulla Beach by fishermen. It was still wrapped in a blue tarp and zipped inside the silver surfboard bag. Rogerson was arrested at his home the following day. Now, in a full circle moment, the disappearance of Chris Flannery, Mr. Rentokil, remains a mystery. His body has never been found, and rumours about who, how, and where he was killed have always run wild. But is this mystery going to be solved now that Roger's not around to guard the truth anymore? One of the rumours that gained traction over the years was that Flannery had been lured onto Sydney Harbour for a day on a boat with gangster George Freeman, and that once out there, he was murdered and dumped overboard, all at the behest of Roger Rogerson. In fact, the Australian newspaper reported that McNamara gave evidence during the Gow murder trial to the effect that Rogerson had admitted as much to him, but that evidence was suppressed by the court. Well, Flannery's friend, who continues to be his greatest supporter, is back with us today to share more memories of Roger the Dodger. He doesn't think Chris Flannery died that way, but he does think Roger was behind it, and he'll explain how their once close relationship soured, and lots more very soon. First up, though, we begin with asking Ray Mooney what he thought when he first heard that Roger Rogerson was on his deathbed just days ago.
I think there was an article that came through the Herald Sun. That was, and then they took it down for 3 days, which was very interesting. So that was the first, I just fluked it and just saw it. And then and then everyone started commenting everywhere else. And everyone who's ever done anything on him has sort of been asked, I think.
Yeah, I bet. You know, that's what I thought. That was my comment on social media was I said, oh, I bet some people are refreshing their manuscripts and everything else this weekend. It is interesting, as you say, that story appeared and then disappeared. And even when Roger died, I assumed it would be splashed across every news site and everywhere, but they kept it pretty quiet in a way.
The whole media scenario around him is very, very interesting. If you go back to when he originally sued Kerry Packer, and Kerry Packer brought in Turnbull, the guy who went on to be the Prime Minister, this was over the killing of Lanfranchi, where it was where they reported Sally-Anne Huckstick's accusations against Rogerson that it was an absolute ambush.
Of course.
And that he was murdered.
On 60 Minutes.
Well, what actually happened at the time, the police association with Roger sued. And Packer had a meeting with Rogerson, and they agreed on an amount that was never disclosed. However, the rumours were that he was going to get a lot of favourable publicity. And that actually happened. If you go back and look at, you know, the publicity and the way the media have had played an incredible role in the rise and the rise of Rogerson until the jury shooting, where they started to sort of see that there was a bit more of a media commodity by arguing both sides, and support was pulled out from him then, and he sort of went down, down, down. But it was very interesting in the early days in terms of the media's support and then their non-support of him.
Yeah, I had no idea about that, any of that.
Well, he was destined to be commissioner. I think everyone would acknowledge that
now.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You know, he was the sort of the bright star on the horizon. And despite the fact that he was exonerated over Lanfranchi, there was such a bad smell about it. It was quite incredible. And where the media failed to follow through on Lanfranchi was that there were 17 police in that laneway at the time who supported his arguments. And his arguments were that he went bang, bang straight away. And there were witnesses in nearby houses that said that there were at least 11 seconds between both shots. Now, 17 police supported him, which meant that, gee, there's an incredible smell here within the police force. And that never sort of came to the forefront until decades later.
A couple of days ago, somebody came forward with an inscription that Roger had written inside a book about him, and this person had gone to one of those speaking nights that Roger was part of back in the, when was that, early 2000s, when he and Chopper Reid and Mark Jackson were touring.
The Psychos, the Australian Psychos.
That's right, yeah. And Roger was, you know, he wasn't scared of a nice inscription in a book. He wrote some pretty hairy things in people's books.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This book, he wrote Three Bullets and Three Men Dead.
He's backtracked on one of those.
I was going to say, I assumed one of them was Warren Lanfranchi, who we've discussed. Who were the other two, do you think?
Well, the other two are documented quite well. The guy was named Philip Weston. He backtracked on that and said it was a sniper who shot him, when in fact, at the time, he took credit for it. And the other guy was that Lawrence Byrne. That was shot during the attempted holdup, and he definitely took credit for that. So he quite like it's. I think if you look at the man in terms of the psychology of the man, there was varying stages throughout his life where he was really addicted to being what we call the best at what you do, and he started out by being the best typist in the entire police force because he did shorthand and he was a very quick typist. Then he started out with a reputation of being the best verbaler, and everyone wanted those reputations at the time. And then, of course, no other person in the New South Wales police force has shot and killed three people. So he was quite willing to put his hand up to the three, although later on down the track he did say he didn't kill Weston.
These were three people who were, he was on duty, and these three men were on the run at the time, and he was supposed to be arresting them. Is that correct? That
yes.
Philip Weston was at Avoca Beach in New South Wales.
That's right.
And Lawrence Bushy Byrne at Kingsford in 76 and 78 respectively. And so on all three occasions, these were shots fired in the line of duty was his defence. And so that was the big brag, was that he had gotten away with shooting three men, supposedly.
His big brag legally
yeah.
was that he had shot three people. That was his big brag legally. The other two, by the way, were shots in company with other detectives.
Yeah.
And the last one, there was two. I think it was Harding who might have been, and Harding since dead. So,
but as you say, he was a bragger. I mean, whether it was he was the best typist in the service or he was the only bloke who'd gotten away with shooting three blokes on duty legally, he loved to be able to brag that he was special.
Well, and that's what he did, by the way. And he was accompanied by the media, who really did support him. You know, we're talking about a time where, you know, the most watched crime films of the day were the Dirty Harry series, the revenge concepts. And the world was really saying, look, if police believe someone is really in the wrong, we should give them the right sometimes to go outside the legal boundaries. And that's what was happening. It really was. And he grabbed that mantle and ran with it. And so he had an incredible reputation within the police force. He was honoured, really honoured. You know, people, even today, there are some people who still can't believe that he killed Jamie Gow.
I know what you mean. And you're right. I mean, he won three bravery awards.
Well, he won the Peter Mitchell one, which was a big one.
Yeah.
The really big one. The biggest loss that I have seen in the last 20 years has been the loss of investigative journalism from papers like The Age. And that to me is the biggest loss that has actually happened. And that's allowed a lot of people to escape incredible scrutiny. We no longer have that real, what we do now is, and I say this nicely, we do podcasts. We do all these kinds of stuff, but we don't ever really research. Like, you know, I nicely say this.
No, I take your point, because we, we talk to journalists. I had no idea about the tobacco wars that are going on in Melbourne until last November, when we had a journalist on who is an investigative journalist from The Age. But I know, I take your point in that their newsrooms have shrunk so much. But this woman has been investigating those tobacco wars for, 12 months previously and writing about it. And now here we are with an arson attack a week on tobacco shops in Melbourne. And my local shop down my main street here was done two nights in a row a week ago, and I think, wow, we should all know about this. I only know about this because I tracked down a journalist and she educated me. She explained it all. But you're right. They are the keepers of the important stories, of the truth, of the education. They're the people who tell us what's really going on. But you're right. The context is really fascinating in terms of the popular culture of the time, because there was this sense of the Dirty Harry kind of cop who just did whatever needed to be done, and the rest of us should turn a blind eye and should let them get on with the work, get on with the job.
Yeah, and in the film industry, that was followed by all the Bronson revenge films, and we still have the Denzel Washington sort of like films today. They are very popular films, and we don't enshrine it in legality, but most people would argue that, look, if they're going to clean the streets and keep us safe, then we should give them the right and support them to do it, even though we can't legally enshrine it.
Yeah. I have had people mention to me Roger's arrest record and say to me, well, listen, he was obviously a very good copper too, because he was up to all sorts of shenanigans, whilst he was taking kickbacks, he was working in drug trades, he was doing all that stuff, he was still making a lot of arrests. So this suggestion is almost that he must have been twice as good a cop if he was able to be a criminal at the same time. What do you make of that?
Oh, there's no doubt about that. Like, he was very successful as both. And there's been a lot of people in that category. But you've got to factor in the fact that he had a reputation of being the best verbaler in the game. And he was taken up to the Whiskey Go-Go in Queensland to verbal Finch. He was the person in the Croatian Six who verbaled them, and in the Ananda Marga, he verbaled Anderson, and that has since come out that's the fact that he was the best verbaler. They took him interstate when they wanted to really make certain there were going to be no holes in alleged confessions. He was excellent at doing that. Excellent.
What was the purpose in that, though? I mean, when we talk about the Ananda Marga story, that was to do with the Hilton bombing, right?
Yes.
Now, inside the Hilton were some of Australia's biggest politicians. Like, that could have been an incredible political assassination. That was, it's fascinating that we don't talk about that or think about that case a lot anymore. It happened in 1978. So what was the motivation for someone like Roger to pursue a false confession?
Well, with the Ananda Marga one, it was to cover up for the stupidity of whoever did it, and the strong evidence was that ASIO had a big hand in it. They blundered it. They stuffed it up totally. So he was brought in to sort of clean up, and that's what he was good at, and that's why he was, he was really celebrated in such a big, big way. That's why you use Rogerson. You knew that you were going to get Anderson finished up going to jail.
Yeah. Did he use violence specifically or singularly, or was he good at psychology to get false confessions?
No. Look, it's really interesting with Rogerson. In a one-out fight, he'd probably not come out too well. But if you're handcuffed to a table or to a chair, then you're going to come out, second best no matter what. So he had a rep. Oh, and by the way, you've got to remember the squads he worked with. He worked with the armed robbery squad. He worked with Section 21. He worked with the most violent of the most violent police. And you did not get their respect if in any way you pulled back or you showed timidity. So he was as vicious as anyone, but he wasn't a fighter.
What do you think was going through his mind when he was in his, how old was he when he committed the crime that he finally went to jail for, the murder of Jamie Gow? When he was retired, he was on the speaking circuit. He was seen as a lovable rogue, literally standing next to Chopper Reed. He was in that kind of, he was able to go on stage every night and boast and be celebrated and be paid for it. What do you think got into his mind, he and his co-offender McNamara, another former policeman, when they decided to get in back into the drug trade?
Well, I think the story's never been told properly.
No.
And I've read a lot about from so-called, mainly from police versions of it, but this is just my theory. But if you look at that very, very closely, when Gower is driven to meet McNamara with the drugs, there's two other people in the car with him who 2 days after Gow's disappearance fly back to overseas. It was strongly rumoured that Gow had been working with federal police in terms of potentially setting up triad people. If this is the case, you've got to backtrack all the way through. And there's so much more to that than what we know. Like, arguably, this kid turns up with McNamara and there's two people. So they know, these two that have gone with him know the whole deal. In other words, they know what's actually happening. Supposedly, when Rogerson gets there, he goes in and nearly immediately the kid is killed. So whichever one of them did it, it's happened straight away. Now, if they're talking about that, oh, they would there to buy ice, and supposedly it was $700,000 worth of ice, a bit under 3 grams. To me, that is a potential payment for, look, we need to get rid of this kid. I don't think that's ever been followed properly, and there's a good reason for it. The federal police stuffed it up totally. Totally stuffed it up again. They really stuffed it up. And that was never, ever gone into. Rogerson's also the type of guy who knows that, you know, they've both sort of got together, put their heads together, worked out whatever defence they're going to go with, and at the same time knowing very well that you've got to shut your mouth on this one or else there's going to be heaps to pay. And he always did. Rogerson always shut his mouth. He never did deals. He never gave anyone else up, despite the fact that a lot of crime writers like to make out he did. He didn't. No one else went to jail when he was caught. He didn't get any, didn't do deals. He stood solid. I have a feeling this is a totally untold story. That no one's gone near yet because they're terrified. They don't want to upset the apple cart.
No, there's two big apple carts that you've mentioned.
To me, that was a, to me, that was a straight out hit.
Yep.
You know, you keep the drugs.
It never quite added up, did it?
Not only did it not add up, but no one went for it in court. It was never mentioned, you know, never. And that doesn't make any sense at all. How do they know how many, like there was no one else there to check the drugs? You know, it just doesn't make sense. And these two blokes who disappear, they know he's gone with McNamara. So there's got to be a lot more to it.
The two blokes who've dropped him off. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, totally.
And you do raise a good point. A man like Rogerson doesn't act in a vacuum. He doesn't work alone ever. And throughout his career, he never did bring anyone down with him.
No, he didn't. No matter what they say, people like to say he did. And they like to say, I've read all these coppers who talk about, oh, no, he did try and do deals behind the scenes. Absolute bullshit.
Yeah, you'd think one of them would have come off if he had tried.
No, he always stood solid, no matter what. Even when he went to jail over the potential jury shooting and the hidden accounts, he never gave anyone else up. Stood solid. Those he could have got out. He could have really turned on those other guys who tried to help him out. He didn't.
And when we think about why an old man might commit a crime for a lot of money like that, I mean, I don't think many of us have enough money in our pockets to ever not think about a potential $100,000, couple of $100,000 job. Roger Rogerson didn't have a lot of money by that sort of time in his life, did he? It's not like he walked out with a big...
He gave it all to lawyers.
Well, that's it.
He gave it all to lawyers.
Yeah. Right?
And his divorce and whatever. And those speaking engagements, that he wasn't paid a lot on that. And they didn't last that long either.
So really and truly, by the time he hit his 70s, he wouldn't have been living high on the hog.
No, and he was never outside of crime either. He'd always acted as what you call somebody who you could get a quote off. In other words, you'd go along to him and sort of for information, you'd pay for information and he'd set you straight. He always had that reputation. That's why all the top crims still work with him. Even the ones in Melbourne, the so-called top ones in Melbourne were still friends with him, you know. After everything, they still were friends with him.
How recently do you think he was active and working?
Oh, I don't think he ever stopped, ever. Mm. Those guys can't stop. That's what keeps them going. That's their whole life. You know, they're addicted to what the rewards that come with being willing, being informative, following through, being able to bring things. Those guys never, ever stop, ever. Good crooks never retire.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I was always telling Chris Flannery, get away from him. You're mad, absolutely mad. And he'd say, no, Ray, this guy I trust totally. No, I always thought he was disastrous and dangerous. And he thought the same about me, because I was a person who was sort of like had done a couple of plays that were related to Chris Flannery, and he was always wary of people who were writers or, you know. So he was never friendly to me, and he was always telling Chris that I was a, you know, don't get sucked in by Mooney.
It's interesting to me though that Chris's attitude wasn't, oh, I can take him, or I'm not afraid of him because
he trusted him.
It was, I trust him.
Yeah, totally. Because they did some really willing jobs together, and Chris had every reason to trust him. And plus, the other thing is, Rogerson was the guy who introduced Chris to Jeffrey Edelston when Chris needed to escape a judge he was going to go in front of for an appeal that he'd been given a year for an assault on a doctor. Mm. And it was Rogerson and Duff who sort of took him along and introduced him to Edelston. And that saved him. You know, they got away from that judge, and they did it again. They did it twice.
Like physically got away?
They were. Chris was in front of two different judges for different trials. One was the murder of a fellow called Loxley, and they wanted to put that off, which they did. And he was admitted to hospital for suspected heart attack. This is Chris. Mm-hmm. The moment that the trial was given an adjournment, he left the hospital the same day, and that happened twice. So Rogerson had done some good things for him, and he really did trust him.
What other willing jobs did they do together now that they've both passed on? Is there anything you can tell us you haven't been able to tell us before?
There's a lot, but I won't. Oh, I did write about one in the when I first wrote A Green Light, which was about Roger, you know, the last section of it's about Rogerson and Chris. I had to change things because of libel laws, so I wasn't able to put a few things in. But when I rewrote it recently as an e-book, I put a few things in there that actually happened, and he would have got a bit of a shock when he read that, because he wouldn't have known that, no, that this is Rogers, and he wouldn't have had the faintest that anyone else knew. But no, Chris and I were close, and I knew that. So I wrote about all that because he disappeared, and I believe Rogerson did it. So that's why I wrote the book.
In episode 317 of Australian True Crime, our guest today, Ray Mooney, went into detail as to how he believes his friend Christopher Flannery met his demise.
Rogerson arranges a meeting. This is the most sus meeting of all time. He says, look, come and talk to these people about this jury shooting. I want to put this... So he brings along these top coppers, and Chris and
jury,
doesn't want to go.
Jury was a copper. Who was shot at. There was an attempted attempted shooting of jury.
So anyway, Chris goes to this meeting reluctantly, and this is opinion.
Yep.
It's opinion. That's when they followed him. They followed him home.
Do you think it's the story that I think is the most sort of popular part of the narrative that we keep talking about is that he went out on a boat, was killed on a boat and then thrown over the side. Don't you think that's what happened?
No. That happened to a fellow called Brian Alexander, who was a law clerk. And the folklore is that he was taken out in the boat, like as a police barbecue on a boat.
Yeah.
And dumped overboard. No, nothing
that
to do with Chris.
That wasn't Chris.
Nothing to do with Chris, no.
What do you think happened to Chris?
Oh, I've always, and I'm surmising, one of the things that Rogerson used to say to Chris was, look, mate, every time you've done one of your hits, you've left the body for us. How smart are you? And he said, look, come and I'll show you what we do. No, this is true.
Wow.
So he takes him to the furnace in a, what is it, those wood yards, you know, where they burn the guns.
The seized
guns. Well, the guns are either seized or they under, you have a, an amnesty, and you can bring your guns in, and every so often, the ones that they want to, the ones that they're not going to resell, the ones that they want to, they'll go and burn. And that's officially through the furnace. Everything's got to be officially through the furnace. But I think a few other things have been put through there.
I remember you told us last time that, you know, there's the stories about, oh, someone took him out on a boat, Chris, and all this other stuff, but that's not what you believe.
No, I believe that, put this way, I wasn't there, so I really don't know. And all I'm doing is deducting from the logical facts that I do know. And I, in my mind, I'm very certain that I conclude that he would have been picked up by Rogerson, and it wouldn't surprise me if it was Duff or one of the other. There was a lot of other coppers who we worked with and stuck with. And by the, at this time, Rogerson had been sacked by the police force, by the way. He was sacked in 84. Chris disappears in 85. So there were a lot of police that was still very close to Rogerson and had good reasons to ensure that Chris Flannery disappeared, because at that stage, they really did believe he had shot jury, and they were, the police force were really dirty on themselves for not having evened up on the shooting of jury, because at the time they really believed that it had nothing to do with Rogerson, that another copper could never do that. But like, things started leaking out, and it was, became a little bit obvious that Rogerson was involved, because here's jury who's dying, and as he's dying, he says, look, it's probably related to the time that Rogerson tried to bribe me. Why would he make that up? Jury would never, why would someone on their deathbed make that up when they didn't, when jury never even really knew Rogerson? Why would he make that up when he's dying? Mm. So a lot of people believe that Rogerson was involved in that. And down the track, the evidence now starts to suggest that it was Rogerson himself who shot jury.
And so when they've come from a place where your mate, your very close mate, Chris Flannery, is saying to you, no, don't worry about it, I trust him, I trust Rogerson, years earlier, and then you now believe that it was Rogerson who was, if not Christopher's murderer, then certainly the person who called for his murder. How did they get there? I mean, you've just explained about Chris Jury's murder, but why would Rogerson not trust Flannery by that stage. What did you think Flannery was going to do about it?
At that stage, it's got nothing to do with trusting Flannery. It's to do with ensuring that the criminal milieu and the scene in which everyone's operating in can get back to functioning correctly. Because it was at the time of where the terminology that was used was gangland wars. And there were three factions, or there were two major factions who were fighting against each other, and it was getting out of hand. So much so that, like, the police had arranged, for example, for Chris to shoot Dominic on the steps of the police station when he was brought in for questioning. They botched that. It was botched totally. So everything was out of control, and everyone was completely sort of infighting and fighting with everyone. The deal was they bring all the heads in, they bring the McPhersons in, the Freemans in, the McCanns, all the fighting, the warring factions. And the deal is, look, there's no way in the world that this is ever going to stop unless Flannery's got rid of.
Right, okay, because it was very in, wasn't it? Suddenly they've got, the accusation is that Flannery has tried to bribe Drury through Rogerson. He has sent Rogerson to try and bribe another officer. Also, Flannery's firing shots on the steps of a police station. So they must have been feeling like, who the fuck does he think he is? Like, it's one thing to be working with us, but it's meant to be on the quiet, mate. Like, you're not meant to be so open about it. I'm sure he knew that it would end this way sometime, his life. Do you think he would have been shocked when he realised it was that moment and who was about to end his life?
Probably, but it happened so quickly you don't have time for that. There's no such thing as this, you know, sit down there and shut up and all that stuff. It's just bang, bang, straight away, immediately. The moment that a car door opens and someone comes, it's straight away. And there's backup, you know, that you don't just do something like that and no one sees a thing, you know, like. But I'm only imagining that, by the way, because I'm surmising it from just logical deduction. You never muck it. It's to say, you don't muck around with what you call willing people who are capable. You just don't muck around.
Obviously, there was no deathbed confessions, and I don't think anyone was really seriously expecting any. But do you think any stories of any importance will come out now after Roger's death? Do you think any crimes will be solved, or anyone will come forward with any information that's relevant to anything?
I don't think any crimes will be solved. I think a lot of stories are going to start to appear. And I just love it how, like, especially ex-crims, you know, they're all rewriting history with themselves as heroes now. And it's so laughable. It really is laughable. You know, the number of people supposedly who have bashed Chris Flannery.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I just cannot believe it.
And that's a good point, actually. Yes, moving forward, let's not get too excited by people who tell us that they once bashed Roger Rogerson or whatever, strong-armed him in any way or conned him or anything like that, yeah.
Look, there's no doubt he verbaled a lot of people who didn't deserve it, and he probably verbaled a lot of people who were guilty, but there were a lot of people in prison as a result of him. The thing that I've always been disappointed over, his relationship with Chris and what happened with Chris. But the thing that I've been more disappointed with was how Rogerson used to justify his behaviour by making out that all the people who he associated with were informers, and they weren't. You know, that's like he always says that Chris Flannery was his informer. God, like you would trust your life with the fact that he would never inform on anyone. He said the same thing on national television about Nettie Smith. The irony of it was that Nettie then ultimately turned an informer for ICAC and gave up all the corrupt police that he dealt with, but he never gave up any crims. He only ever gave up police.
Yep.
And, you know, everyone who arguably who he was associated with, they were all informers. And that's the worst thing you can ever do to a crim, ever, is leave them with the legacy that, oh, they were an informer. We police get away with doing that all the time. They're never taken to task. No one ever asks, okay, show me.
Do you think times have changed? Do you think we could ever see the likes of Roger Rogerson again?
I don't think they've changed that much, but they've definitely changed. You know, like there's so much, there's too much scrutiny now. CTV footage has changed the world, and it's the same with the police as it is for the criminals. The world has changed, but human behaviour is never going to change. It's a matter of finding ways of getting away with it. Well, there will always be the Rogersons.
Thank you to our guest, Ray Mooney, whose book, A Green Light, is still available, but only as an ebook.
If you need support after listening to this podcast, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14 or contact 1-800-RESPECT on 1-800-737 732 or 1-800-RESPECT.org.au. Indigenous Australians can contact 13 Yarn on 13 92 76 or 13yarn.org.au. Thank you for downloading this episode of Australian True Crime. We'll be back next week.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Australian True Crime, the nation's leading independent true crime podcast, is hitting the road with our live show. We're coming to Sydney, Melbourne and Brisbane this July, and tickets will be available starting May 10th at 9:30 a.m. sharp. They sold out in 2 hours last time, so do not dilly-dally. We know the suburbs of Australia are teeming with some of the most intriguing and chilling true crime stories the world has ever heard. Don't miss the chance to dive deeper and get involved with a live Q&A. With over 1.5 million downloads monthly, these tickets will sell out. So keep an eye on our social media pages and check the podcast bio for direct links to purchase yours as soon as they're released on Friday, May 10. I can't wait to see you there.